Without grocery stores nearby, how are neighborhoods getting the fresh food they need? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. WVXU's Community Dispatch series has been exploring the problem of food access and local solutions and found several communities in the region using innovative approaches to make sure their residents get nutritious food. Joining me now to discuss the problem and solutions are Cincinnati Children's Community Systems Director, Dr. Carly Riley. Thanks for being here, Carly.
Thank you so very much.
Miser's Market Site Director, Jasmine Taylor. Great to have you here, Jasmine.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on your new promotion.
Thank you so much.
And WVXU long-form reporter, Nick Swartzel. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, Lucy.
Great to have you all here. Nick, how big a problem is the lack of access to fresh food locally? How many people in neighborhoods are we talking about?
That's a really complicated question.
And wages, okay.
Oh, there
now,
we go.
Let me let you start over. Okay, go ahead.
I was wondering why I couldn't hear myself in headphones. It's because no one else could hear me
That's
either.
That's right.
So it's a complicated question, and there's a lot of different answers depending on how you parse it. And I just want to mention that food access is connected to a lot of other different systemic issues in our region and all regions. And so numbers are a little, they're going to be a little complicated. One way to look at it, and this would be kind of a bare minimum number, is thinking about the number of people who live more than a mile from a grocery store who don't have a car, right? And that is going to be really hard to get your groceries if you're in that situation, even if you're on a bus line. That's according to a USDA food access atlas that you can look up, Google that, and you can find it. That's about 7,000 people in Hamilton County, roughly another 1,000 in Northern Kentucky, and then hundreds in Claremont County, hundreds in Butler County. Lots of people. May not seem like a ton given the population of our county, but that's 7,000 people who are having a significantly hard time getting access to food. That doesn't take into account folks who might live in other areas but have that are closer to a grocery store but have mobility issues or they're elderly and it's hard for them to get a half mile to the grocery store with or without a car. It doesn't take into account people who might live in like higher income areas. Maybe they're on Section 8. Maybe they just live with a relative or something and they don't have access to a car. So that's a very, very like sort of minimal number, but there are other folks who are experiencing food access difficulties in other ways.
Good to know. And Carly, what are the implications of that for both physical and mental health?
So challenges in getting access to food and having real nutrition causes problems for people both at the individual and then at like the whole population level. So for individuals, we know from a whole lot of research that when individuals have difficulty being able to maintain the necessary nutrition for their physical health, that they're more at risk for long-term physical health issues, including obesity, hypertension, diabetes, among many others. But we also know that this takes a real toll on mental health as well. And so more likely to experience depression, anxiety, and other mental health needs as well. Beyond that, beyond physical and mental health, this really affects a person's whole self, including their ability to show up and learn at school or show up and perform at work, as well as their ability to kind of experience dignity and trust kind of in their relationships and in the world. And so this is really a whole person, whole community problem.
So Jasmine, you are the site director of Miser's Market in Lower Price Hill. This is one of the innovative solutions we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
Explain what Miser's is. I mean, it's not a typical corner store.
No, it isn't. It is actually a food pantry / grocery store. So when we noticed that there was food insecurity going on, and we were actually known as a food desert because there was nothing within the next few miles, that's when Miser's was established in 2017, and they opened in 2021. And that's when we decided, let's give the community what they need, and not only just snacks and things you can get at the local corner store, but let's offer them free produce. And then that expanded to being able to do community meals and daily meals for our unsheltered community. So definitely a lot more than the local grocery store you see, where we're actively getting food into kids' homes, into kids' mouths, into family homes, and the mother that may not have time to cook helping out with that.
Yeah. And this is in the Lower Price Hill neighborhood, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We are located in the Lower Price Hill community.
Yeah. Jasmine, you mentioned this was, the idea was 2019, and it took like 2 years to get this up and running. Is that
right? Well, it was 2017.
Oh, 2017. Okay.
Opened in 2021. It was originally back, I want to say 1959. It was known as Parkview Market. And then later they closed down because they lost Mr. Miser. And then that's when our founder, Reba, decided to look into opening it up in that area. So they had to redo a lot of things. So it did take a few years, but that was because they wanted to make sure we had the things that were really going to help the community versus just opening without the without the proper things in play.
Yeah, that makes sense. You wanted to make sure you were meeting the needs that were out
yes,
there.
Yes, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're talking about problems with food access and innovative local solutions. If you have questions or comments, you can email us at talk@wvxu.org. Carly, what kind of hurdles make it difficult to create a market like Miser's? I mean, it seems like to have something that's both a food pantry and kind of a grocery store, and I understand you have some prepared meals. I mean, there's a lot going on there. What are some of the hurdles that communities face trying to do something like this?
So in developing really like community-owned, home-owned solutions, there are a number of different hurdles that communities need to overcome. And I'm probably only going to name a few of them that seem most obvious. First of all, it's a matter of space. They need to have the space within the community that is a trusted, safe space that then can be cultivated, you know, within and by the community itself to become a place that people want to go to, feel good at being in, and then can trust that what they're getting are high quality and come with a sense of real care and humanity. But then there are all these systems, right, that are developed to try to make food accessible at that space that communities then often have to figure out how to gain access to. So how do we have food delivered on a regular basis in the sufficient quantities and the right balance of foods so that we'll have things available in our own community that will provide healthful options, options that are culturally relevant and that are at the right price point. And that is in and of itself like a whole industry that a community, if not connected, right, to others who are doing similar things, really has to figure out on their own. And so I know that many have benefited here in Cincinnati from talking amongst different neighborhood-based grocery store movements in order to be able to understand how to kind of overcome those hurdles. And then in order to like maintain the place as one that is really community-owned, there needs to be a whole governance structure, a whole relationship structure. And that requires a tremendous amount of effort and expertise and care and maintenance over time. It is a truly heroic endeavor to be able to build in a food desert a community-owned grocery store and then sustain that over time.
Jasmine, you were shaking your head yes,
when
Carly
agree
was
with
talking.
Everything you said when you started with the fact that you have to build that relationship. I think so many times people feel uncomfortable with saying that you need help. And I love the fact that Miser's plays a role where we have the whole community. They are comfortable with coming in and expressing, you know, I had to pay all my bills this month. I need some ideas. How can I utilize this free produce? If you don't say anything, and I think we're kind of in an era where people aren't comfortable with expressing what's really going on. But when you do, you open up that door for so many resources and so many people to be able to help you. So that's a big thing. And we get a lot of people that they'll come in and, you know, you don't have to take from us because we can give it to you. Mm-hmm. And where they're used to that, now those same people that might have did it in the past, they're coming in and they're telling us, hey, I haven't ate all day today. Can you help me? And we have providers to help us with that too. So mm-hmm. It's really nice.
Yeah. Wow. Nick, Miser's is just one of several community solutions you highlighted in your reporting in this terrific Community Dispatch series. Tell us what's happening in the Beekman Corridor.
Yeah, so for those not familiar, the Beekman Corridor, those are the neighborhoods right along the Mill Creek, just on the west side of Cincinnati, across the Walnut, or the the Western Hills Viaduct and the Hopple Viaduct. So kind of giving you an idea of where that is in the city. And these are communities that are generally lower income, lots of folks who don't drive. and who don't have a grocery store nearby. And so what folks have done there is they've created this monthly market that is more than just kind of like a farmer's market. You can go there and you can get a wide array of free produce. You can get eggs. You can get meat of different kinds, but also all kinds of greens and vegetables. But in addition to that, there are folks who have set up their own kind of stands who live in the community that sell food-related products and then also some other products as well. And on top of that, they have kind of coordinated with a local little store where you can pick up produce there on a more regular basis. This is all put together through Working in Neighborhoods. It's a nonprofit. They did it as part of this sort of climate resiliency plan that has been going on in several neighborhoods, and it's kind of expanding. So the cool thing about the market, too, is it moves around. It's in different places within the Beekman Corridor every month, and it's an interesting thing to see because it's not just about like, well, here's some food. It's like, hey, do you want to start a little business, you know, like with some of this like resource? And I think it works both ways. So it's like both here's a need that you have. We're going to like help you with that, but also like help you figure out a way to kind of do your own thing, you know? In addition to that, the market also, this sort of like initiative helps folks who are community gardening, trying to like support growing more food within the Beekman Corridor, because there's kind of a long history of that. Like people kind of remember like, oh, we used to grow a lot more of our own food. We used to forage a lot more. Like those kind of things were really interesting to me to hear. There's like this echo of sort of the way folks used to get their food in the community, trying to bring that back.
Yeah. And am I remembering correctly that there's a chef who shows people how they can prepare some of these foods too?
Yeah, this is kind of a theme, I think. So Jasmine is also a chef and has Jasmine, also designed.
So many talents.
Just wanted to give a shout out there. And she designs things for people in Lower Price Hill to kind of like get inspiration for how they use produce. There's a similar thing going on in the Beekman Market. Teresa Thomas is her name. She makes some great different dishes that she's showing people how to make at the market every month. Like she's there chopping up vegetables and stuff. And the last time I went, it was vegan chilitos or vegetarian chilitos, I think, made with like lentils and all kinds of the greens and stuff that were at the market. So it was really good.
Yeah. And it looked good. And from the pictures that you took, and it looked tasty.
I kind of want some right now. Yeah. Honestly.
It's the lunch hour. It's dangerous to talk about food during lunch hour. Nick, how does that compare with what's happening in Walnut Hills?
Yeah. So Walnut Hills is a really interesting example of sort of food resiliency, I think. Not to like kind of minimize the challenges that have been there. They lost a grocery store, I think like 8 years ago now, a Kroger. They made a lot of headlines. And I think like part of the reason it made headlines is because at the time and even now, Walnut Hills is kind of redeveloping, for lack of a better term. There's a lot of interest in Walnut Hills. There's a lot of investment in Walnut Hills, but they still don't have a full scale grocery store. So whereas in the Beekman Corridor, there's kind of like one initiative that's like gathering around the resources. In Walnut Hills, it's like a lot of different things are happening that are like people are finding different ways to meet these needs and fill these gaps. One that I found really interesting is Queen Mother's Market, which has done some work with Your Store of the Queen City, which founded Misers. So they are kind of like connecting. And so Queen Mother's Market wants to eventually found a full-scale grocery store in the neighborhood. And they've gotten some funding to do that that is federal funding and is so currently tied up in some questions about what's going to happen.
Big question marks, I bet.
Yeah. But in the meantime, what they're doing is they're buying produce or getting free produce from food providers. They're teaming up with other co-ops in the region to kind of like get good deals on food, increase their buying power. And they're taking this directly to various places where people who have food access problems live. Walnut Hills is interesting because there's a very high number of people there that have disability, like they have mobility issues or they're older. Mm-hmm. And so Queen Mother's Market is taking that food directly into their buildings, like in the lobby, setting up a market in the lobby and being like, hey, come down and get some produce, you know? Like, so I thought that was pretty interesting. There's a long history of community gardening in Walnut Hills too. Queen Mother's works on that, but so do a lot of other people. I talked to Gary Dangle, who some folks will recognize that name. He's really well known in the community for community gardening and some initiatives to kind of bring together some of the food providers around that community gardening and make something a little more centralized. Le Soupe and the Free Store Food Bank also distribute food in the community like once a week now, I think. Yeah.
Jasmine, it sounds like you all are working with the market that Nick just talked about, that there's a lot of collaboration happening. How important is that? I'm thinking back to what Carly was talking about earlier, not only about creating this safe and trusted space, but just the logistics of figuring out how to get what you need in that market that people want, and like produce spoils and milk yes. spoils and egg spoil. Like, you got to be really on top of how much you need. How complicated is that to figure it out? And are you helping other people figure that out too?
I feel like that's connected, because it's not complicated because we are helping other people figure it out. So we, and other people are helping us as well. So we partner with Last Mile Food Run, La Soup. We have so many different people that are coming into play. And then even where, when we have waste, compost, how can we utilize this until the last bit? And somebody that's coming from corporate America, where you see a lot being wasted and a lot of things being thrown away, we actually have systems in play where people are utilizing everything from the start to the finish. So whether it comes through us and we're donated again, or whether it's donated to us, everybody is playing a part in it. And the more resources and connections that we can build, that we can build up, the better, because then we have other communities that are getting into this too. Because I'm from downtown Cincinnati, and I've never seen anything like Misers. I knew about the Free Store Food Bank because that was close to me. But to have a grocery store where I can walk to and go get these, you know, get free produce and also do my grocery shopping, that would have been wonderful for me. So I'm hoping that that's where we grow yeah. in those areas. And the more connections, the better.
Mm. Carly, all these communities are finding ways to address this need, lots of different ways. This is maybe a weird question, but I'm wondering, is this something to be celebrated, or does this mean we have a real problem?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking that question, because that is exactly where my brain has just been sitting, in that I really do want to celebrate these community solutions that are being developed. There's so many informal systems that exist as a result of people needing to have their needs met and finding ways to do that. And that should be celebrated. And then these formal solutions, which are kind of the non-corporate solutions, also really should be celebrated, in that they are solving things in a way that are really consistent with what people and communities need and want. And the amount of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into actually creating one of these solutions and having it be sustainable, that is something that is incredibly laudable. However, the fact that they have to exist at all is a sign of a massive systems level failure. The fact that we have 2 out of 5children who would endorse food insecurity in our area, that is a massive failure. There's something very wrong going on. We know that in the Cincinnati area, there exists enough food for every Cincinnatian to have a full belly every day. And yet that food is not distributed in a way where that is achievable. And so that is like failure at large scale. And in the setting of that, we have these extraordinary community solutions being developed. And so it's both, to answer your question. And I think one of the things that people then think is that, oh, those corporate solutions then should somehow be scaled, right, in a way that makes it such that these community solutions are not needed. And I would say that's not the way to go forward. In fact, we should pay really close attention to what these informal and community solutions are, because they're onto something that the corporate solutions miss. And our future state, in which every belly is full every day and every night going to bed, should be fed by solutions that are really a hybrid of these, that are informed by each other. Hmm.
Jasmine, how have residents of Lower Price Hill responded to Miser's Market? I'm wondering, are there the types of food that are most popular with the kids who come in or the adults who come in?
Yes. our community, they love and they appreciate us to a point where if we need volunteers, they are there for us to support us. Sometimes they volunteer without us even having to ask, which is a beautiful thing. One of the most popular things that I say that I didn't even know was still going is Yoohoo. We are really like that community oriented where you can tap into things like, you know, the penny candy and different things like that that you aren't used to. But then also you can come in and grab an apple from us or an orange and that's free. So that's even, that's becoming a top favorite one because I'm encouraging it. Like, hey, this is the free stuff, you know. If people have it available, they'll use it. If children see it, they'll try it. But we have to have that door open for them.
Yeah. Well, an apple fill you up a little better than a penny candy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Carly, does it, you know, I read in Nick's reporting and Jasmine just talked about how more kids are gravitating towards those apples and oranges, those items that are free and a heck of a lot better for you. Does that surprise you? I mean, I think a lot of people would assume, oh man, kids, they just want the junk food.
Yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me at all. But I do appreciate that people would find that surprising because we have the wrong narratives, really, in our culture and society. We have a lot of narratives that are really not true. And this is one of those, right, as to what it is that kids really need and want. And in every single neighborhood in which we have these really heroic, largely nonprofit driven endeavors in which they're providing food to kids, kids really want the fruits, they want the vegetables, they want the healthier options. There are many partners who are feeding meals that are whole meals, and the kids, they are filled up by that in a way that is not just their belly being filled up. And that is a really important thing for us to begin talking about. There's a whole bunch of narratives that we really need to undo around youth and community and food. And I'm hopeful that through reporting like yours and through us continuing these stories, that we're going to really be able to build those new narratives and spread those new narratives that really reflect more of an accurate picture.
Yeah. Jasmine, what's your hope for the future of Misers? Do you think this is a model that can be replicated in other places?
Yes, I would love for it to be replicated. And just to go back into what you said, I feel like there is a connection with the hot meal. So where, you know, like you said, there's this narrative about kids not wanting, you know, vegetables and fruits and hot meals and different things like that. We really have to change that. And I'm hoping Misers being the first stepping stone or one of the first stepping stone with that to create, to change that narrative. And in the future, right now, we, in April, we gave out over 15,000 in produce to different families and everything like that. We want to expand. We want to get bigger. And people might look at 15,000 as a lot, but it's not when you look at, when you're looking at it on a scale of how many kids may go to bed without a meal or how many families aren't getting that fresh, those fresh vegetables and fresh fruit. So we want to expand and help other people change the narratives in their community as well. And that's the future that I see for Misers, just inspiring others to do so.
Well, because Jasmine, if I'm remembering Nick's reporting correctly, you all have kind of grab-and-go meals and a microwave so people can heat up their food if they don't have that at home, right? I mean, that's one of the things you all offer?
Yes. One of our partnerships, which is with La Soupe, they actually bring in family meals, which are which is a large pan, or you can get our daily meals. And when you grab the daily meal, you can go right in the back and heat it up in a microwave. And that's things that you don't really think about that's needed, but it helps so much because you know you can come here and I can get a warm meal, and the meal is delicious. I, you know, it's not one of those things where, oh, you know, certain people aren't eating it. Everybody enjoys it. So it's really nice.
Nick, how hard do people in all these communities work to make these different approaches work? It seems like a lot of energy.
Yeah. I mean, as I think Riley and Jasmine both kind of like mentioned earlier, it's starting from the ground up in a lot of ways. Like the systems that exist in other neighborhoods aren't there. And so you've got to really kind of reconfigure everything. And they're not there because sometimes the bottom line doesn't make sense for these larger corporate entities. And so it's even harder because you're existing in a place that doesn't work for the larger system, right? And so that's really challenging, I think. But on top of that, I think there's something else I think about, which is there's another sort of systemic thing that isn't working, I think, in most places, which is like the connection we have with each other. Mm-hmm. And overcoming that trust barrier that Jasmine talked about earlier is difficult. And what I saw like consistently in all three of these locations is that not only are people getting fed more, they're getting healthy food more often, but they're connecting with each other. There's this social fabric that's kind of being rewoven. And that is difficult and super important work too. So there's like kind of multiple systems where they're figuring out how to repair them on a local level.
Yeah, kind of feeds the spirit.
Yeah.
So, Carly, we've only got about a minute left, but does that seem fair that people in these communities that have some of the least resources have to work so hard to make sure they're getting the food they need?
No, this is not fair. Even just the most fundamental kind of definition of fair, it's not fair. But rather, the solutions that they are striving for should be supported in a very different way so that they have the resources, both the expertise, but also the resources of dollars to be able to build those community solutions so that the health and well-being of the people that live in those communities are supported and fostered.
We got an email that I'm going to read real quickly. Mark writes, given that Kroger store closures in some neighborhoods have contributed to the problem, should political leaders approach Kroger about waiving delivery fees for low-income or transportation-challenged people? Interesting thought there. Is that anything you heard about in your reporting, Nick?
I have not, but it's an interesting policy idea. Hopefully some policymakers are listening.
Maybe Kroger's listening. We'll find out. You've been listening to, or I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's Community Systems Director, Dr. Carly Riley, Miser's Market Site Director, Jasmine Taylor, and WVXU long-form reporter, Nick Swartzel. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You can read more of Nick's Community Dispatch series on our website, wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.